place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I am your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Tuesday to you. It is Twitter Tuesday here on the Locked On Bills podcast, one of my favorite episodes of the week where you guys take control of the show and tell me what you want to hear me discuss. And so for the fourth week in a row, I didn't even have to solicit questions or takes. You guys sent them in graciously. Encourage you to do that. If you have something that comes across your timeline or your mind or the news that you would like for me to comment on, hit me up on Twitter at the Joe Marino. Hit me with the hashtag Twitter Tuesday, and I will do my very best to include it on the show. I don't ever mean to not include something that somebody sends in. There's a chance that when I saw it, I didn't immediately put it into my notes and I missed it. So if I miss it, please know it's never on purpose. I do my best to be organized, but it's, you know, monitoring Twitter 24/7 is just not realistic, even though I'm on there quite a bit. So continue to hit me up. Thanks so much for being being a participant and sending in your outstanding takes and questions, and we're going to get to them starting right now. The first one comes from Jamie Box. Jamie says, "Hi, Joe. What's up, Jamie? Question for the podcast on Tuesday. If Devin White is there at number 9, what should Buffalo do, and how likely do you think that is?" Good question. I think what's really difficult about the draft, predicting the draft, especially the top 10, is we think we know what's going to happen, but we don't know what's going to happen. And so I think every scenario should be considered, and one of those being Devin White sliding to number 9. And you even saw this last year with Chicago, where they picked Roquan Smith, who could have went a little bit higher than where he fell to. So off-ball linebackers have a tendency to slide a little bit. Even Tremaine Edmonds, he fell to number 16 last year, and that was a little bit of a surprise for people, and the Bills, you know, moved up and went up and got him. So, yeah, I think Devin White at number 9, something we should talk about. Do I think the Bills should draft Devin White at number 9? I think that would be overkill in a lot of ways, just because you feel really good about what they have in Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano, and you're going to be only playing two linebackers on the field for 60-70% of the time. You're not even going to have three, and so you kind of have to wonder about how much that really helps the team, especially because I think there's going to be good value at other positions that would help the Bills more and be higher rated players on the board. I know that Devin White is one of the most loved players in this year's draft, and I think that he does have a ton of upside to become a star linebacker, a true quarterback of a defense. But I think there will be other players of better or similar value that would help the Bills more. Now, what this could do is set up a trade opportunity, because outside of Devin Bush, the linebacker from Michigan, and Devin White, the linebacker from LSU, I'm not really crazy about this linebacker class. And if you really are looking for an impact guy next year, you better get one of those two Devins at linebacker, because I don't think you can wait and get anyone else. And so if he's on the board, you get really excited about maybe some teams that would want to move up for him. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about the Bills' draft positioning and their overall capital and how many picks they have here in one of the coming up questions, but I don't really think the Bills are in a dire situation where they need to trade back, because the real value in trading back is acquiring more draft capital and getting yourself more picks. And I don't think the Bills are going to be able to roster 10 draft picks, which they already have. So if you were to trade back and you were to be able to net some capital in future years where there's not as many pressing needs, I think that would make sense. But the reality is, I want the Bills to get a high-impact player there at number 9. Somebody that's going to really be one of the faces of the franchise, be the type of player that other teams have to game plan against, that you put out on the field and say, this is going to be one of the reasons why we win football games, is because this guy is such a high-impact guy. And I think they're going to be able to do that at a different position. So if he's there at 9, I probably wouldn't do anything besides pick a different player, unless there was a trade that just you couldn't pass up. And if he gets there to 9, he's going to be, you know, it won't be much further, because after him is Denver at 10, who would love to get a linebacker. I think they're in play for Devin Bush. The Bengals, definitely in play for him. The Packers, definitely in play. I would say it's a lock that one of those three teams would take him. I do think that there's a good chance that Devin White goes number 5 to Tampa Bay, number 4 to Oakland, even the Lions at number 8. So I think there's some landmines along the way. I think his ceiling is probably three to the Jets. His absolute ceiling and his absolute floor is 12 to Green Bay. All right, let's move on to the next one. This one comes from Ryan Thomas. Ryan says, "You've said for a while now that you thought the Bills would take a defensive lineman with their first pick, and after all the free agent additions to the offensive line, it's looking to be more and more correct. Which defensive lineman do you think fit best the Bills with pick number 9? Thank you, Ryan. I was saying defensive line before the free agency, and I always kind of felt like this was going to be the logical direction with this pick in the eyes of the Bills. Not that I ever agreed with it. It was just me being predictive. Now, with that said, kind of talking about the specific options. So looking at the pass rusher side of things, I think Montez Sweat from Mississippi State is very much a fit. It's a little high for me, but this is being predictive. We're talking about what I think the Bills could do. Montez Sweat is a senior. He went to the Senior Bowl. He's a prototype in terms of size. He has long arms, and I think the Bills are really going to like that. I'd love for them to consider Brian Burns. I get nervous about them really valuing a 249-pound pass rusher. I think that the Bills like prototypes, and he's like 20 pounds under the prototype. And so I don't know if he would be in play. To me, he should be. I just don't think he would be. Obviously, Nick Bosa is tailor-made for a 4-3 defense, but he's not going to be anywhere near the discussion. Cleveland Farrell from Clemson, he's a prototype. 6'5", 260 pounds, long arms, plays the run, very technically refined. The question is, you know, does he have the athletic traits to be a really high-impact rusher at the next level? So if the Bills were picking 20 or 25, I can get behind Cleveland Farrell, but they're picking 9. So that's a little bit rich for me. So I think if you're talking about an edge rusher at 9, that's kind of the discussion. If you talk about defensive tackle, Quinnen Williams would be the absolute dream from Alabama. However, Quinnen Williams really shouldn't get out of the top 3 picks. He's an elite prospect. I mean, he's super high impact potential. He's going to be a problem in the NFL. I don't think he's getting there to 9. No way, no how. So I think there are 2 defensive tackles that will be there at 9 that the Bills could choose from. One being Ed Oliver from Houston. Dynamic interior penetrator. Think stylistically Aaron Donald. Now, Aaron Donald's probably the best defensive football player on the planet. So I don't want to be all caught up in that type of a projection. However, I think that's the similar stylistic type player where if you're looking for a true penetration style wrecking ball, you want Ed Oliver. Now, my concern with the idea of Oliver being predictive for the Bills is he's not prototypical at all. He's under 290 pounds. He's got sub 32 inch arms. And so for those reasons, you get nervous that the Bills will take him very seriously as a prospect, just because I think they want prototypes. I could be dead wrong about that, but everything that we've learned about Brandon Bean and the players that he's invested in, high in the draft, they're signed in free agency, they really come with kind of prototypical size, particularly in the offense and defensive line. So I don't know. I get nervous about him being a really coveted guy for the Bills. The guy that I think they're going to love is Christian Wilkins, who he actually has close to 33-inch arms, but he does have sub-33-inch arms. If that's a disqualifier, I think that's foolish. But I think in every sense of the way, in terms of a culture guy, a guy that's worth the pick at a position of need, Christian Wilkins is absolutely, I think, everything the Bills would want in a 3 technique. And so, you know, people rave about his work ethic and his habits, and you watch Clemson, he plays with a lot of energy. He's on the field for special teams. He's everything you could want in terms of that blue collar, loves football, high character, super accomplished. He's a senior, comes from a winning program. You can just see the Bills loving him. So I think he's absolutely in play. So when I talk about defensive line for the Bills at 9, Christian Wilkins, Ed Oliver at defensive tackle, at defensive end, Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, Cleveland Farrell is a little high for me, Montez Sweat. Oh, and I should probably mention Josh Allen. as well from Kentucky, who's really fits the mold of a 4-3 defensive end, super explosive upfield rusher, has some upside in space. He's a little bit underdeveloped in terms of his run defense, but that dude ran circles around SEC offensive tackles all season long. So Josh Allen certainly comes into this discussion as well at number 9. So good chance one of those guys is going to be there. And so I think that's where really there's going to be value for the Bills to get a playmaking style defensive lineman, something that they really don't have, in my opinion, outside of Jerry Hughes. All right, this one comes from JRM. He says, you should take some time to talk about what the Bills should do at number 40 because they're going to get a damn good player at that spot regardless of position. I'm doing an all-mock team where number 40 is between Dalton Risner or Chris Lindstrom. Which would you do? Risner and Lindstrom, those are two offensive linemen, Lindstrom from Boston College, Risner from Kansas State. I like them both pretty similarly. In terms of them being like immediate impact starting offensive linemen, to me, it's a toss in the air. I probably like Risner a touch more, but it's a push for me. I think at number 40 for the Bills, if they were to go defensive line in the first round, I think defensive line could be another option in the second round. If you get a defensive end at 9, you can get a defensive tackle at 40. So at number 40 at defensive tackle, I think I talk about Jerry Tillery from Notre Dame as an option. Maybe Dexter Lawrence from Clemson, but I'm looking for somebody a little bit quicker, a little bit smaller, but he would certainly kind of be value at that point. And then if you flip to the edge side, you know, you talk about maybe Chase Winovich from Michigan, who is just a dude that plays with relentless effort, but he's got technique with it. People just see, honestly, to be honest with you, to be blunt, they see a white pass rusher with long hair and think he's just a gritty guy. Well, he is a gritty guy with high motor and plays with a ton of energy, but he also has technique behind it. And I love that about him. And so if I'm talking edge in the second round, I think that's probably like one of the few guys that I get excited about. And that's why, like, if you're going to get an impact edge defender, you got to get him high, because it just gets to no man's land when you think about having a true impact guy. And so I just don't feel like the value is going to be there at 40 for edge. I think it could be there at defensive tackle. I also think it could be there at tight end. I think there's a chance Irv Smith from Alabama could be there. I don't think either of the Iowa tight ends, Fant or Hockenson, will be there. But if they want to go tight end at 40, I think Irv Smith's potentially an option there. So that's kind of what I think about with number 40. This one, next one comes from Dan Kadar's Clock at Clocking the Draft. And Dan, I don't even know if that's your first name. You've been an awesome guy to interact with on Twitter throughout the years. I really enjoy it. But I got to understand what you're doing here with your Twitter name and your at. Because I know Dan Kadar is with Mocking the Draft and he covers the draft for SB Nation. But like, what are we doing here with your handle? Are you supposed to be a parody account? I don't know, but I enjoy interacting with you. So you hit me up on Twitter and let me know what's going on with your handle. Anyways, he says, I feel like the Bengals are shaping up to be an epic disaster next year. Forget AJ. Any scenarios you see where they swap picks for next year's first rounder, maybe Haskins and Locke still on the board at 9. So this is ambitious, brother. The Bills are picking 9 and the Bengals are picking 11. I don't think there's any way in the world that the Bills flop 2 spots in the first round and somehow net the Bengals 2020 first round pick. I do think they could be interested in a quarterback, but I think you lose me there on the compensation. So the Bills and Bengals have done deals together. I don't think it's impossible to think that. Maybe they want to get ahead of the Broncos, who maybe could draft a quarterback, although I think they're pretty much primed to run with Joe Flacco, as crazy as that sounds. But I don't know if those returns are going to be all. I mean, you might be able to net a third round pick to slide back 2 spots. So I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a real logical trade there, especially not getting that first round pick, man. I like the ambition, but I don't think that's going to happen. The next one comes from Bills Fan. It says, feels like we've already had a successful offseason and we haven't even had the draft yet. Not really used to this, but if Josh Allen doesn't grow, what does it matter? It's all about Allen. You're right. You're 100% right. All these new pieces are wonderful. The 10 draft picks are wonderful. all the cap space coming up is wonderful. You feel good about the coaching staff. You feel good about the infrastructure of this roster and how it can continue to get better. But yeah, the reality is if Josh Allen doesn't continue to evolve and develop and improve as an NFL quarterback, it's not going to matter. That's not unique to Josh Allen. That's the same thing with the Jets and Sam Darnold, or the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson, and the Cleveland Browns at Baker Mayfield. It's all about these quarterbacks. It's a quarterback-driven league. If Josh Allen doesn't continue to improve and develop himself and hone in on his craft and acclimate to these teammates, it doesn't matter. So this isn't a Josh Allen take. This is a literally all 32 teams and their quarterback. It's all about their quarterback. You've got to have top quarterback play to win in this league. And for the Bills, I mean, yeah, it's present. It's relevant for us more than ever because we're really excited about the direction of the team. But that direction is only as bright. That future is only as bright as Josh Allen is in terms of his development. And I'm optimistic about that. There's one thing we've learned about Josh Allen looking at his past is that he is a worker. He embraces that growth mindset. He's a guy that has earned everything from not really being recruited out of high school, playing at JUCO, trying to get into an FBS program, working his way up, becoming a top 10 pick, earning his way as an NFL player and growing dramatically throughout the course of last year. So yeah, there's every reason to be excited about him growing and getting better. So, and you get, for me, I get really excited about Josh entering next season as the guy. I don't think we can overstate it. He entered his NFL career not only with a horrible supporting cast, but in a three-way battle for the starting job. He was taking third-team reps up until preseason, late in the preseason. He didn't win. Nate Peterman was a starter. He never really had a chance to be the guy and take the 75-80% of the first-team reps. So I think we should expect Josh Allen to get better, and I think there's reasons to believe that growth is going to happen like we all hope it does. All right, this next one comes from Intangibles NFL Pod. This was sent in after and referring to all of the receiver signings that the Bills made. He says, so Joe, does this mean DK Metcalf at 9 is very remote? Seems like they are setting themselves up for Oliver or Wilkins at 9. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that it does feel like Oliver or Wilkins seem very logical right now as we talk about this for number 9. As far as DK Metcalf goes, I think there's a room in the Bills receiving core for a player like him. I mean, you talk about that right now your top 4 is a combination of Cole Beasley, Zay Jones, John Brown, and Robert Foster. And then you have Andre Roberts, who he'll be a gadget player and a special teams guy. That's 5 receivers. So, yeah, there's room for more receivers. He would give them a different type of receiver, a bigger receiver, a guy that has the ability to win contested situations, but also a ridiculous speed and ability to really just kind of be a power forward, but also not just that he's going to out-muscle guys, like he's an insane athlete. So I think that – and also another thing about DK Metcalf is that he really fits culture-wise. He's a very hardworking guy, and he's a guy that really – like people rave about his football character, and so I think that really does align very well with the Bills' process and culture and all that type of stuff. So there's reason to believe that he is in play. However, I just feel like the Bills are going to take this opportunity to go with that defensive lineman or maybe a tight end if they were to like one of the Iowa kids, which we'll get into here in just a minute. So I know that I've been preaching to you guys for weeks about defensive linemen and why it's logical, and I'm fully prepared to be wrong about that, but I'm just telling you the way I feel about it. So I think the Bills would probably go receiver in the second or third round. Maybe you look at guys like Kelvin Harmon, Hakeem Butler, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, some of those other big receivers in this class that I think if the Bills wanted to get one of those more alpha type receivers that they could do that later. I don't know. I just, part of me feels like number one, I feel like Jacksonville is going to take DK Metcalf at number 7. I think that's very much a possibility. So, and I also think he's in play for the Lions at 8. So I do think there's a couple of landmines that have to be overcome for him to even be there at 9. So there's that piece of it too. Corey McLennan says, this is more of a take than a question, but to your recent point about roster ability for all 10 draft picks, I think the Bills will be active on day 2 and early day 3 with trades to get players they want and will end up with fewer than 10 draft picks. Corey, this has been on my mind for a long time. You're 100% right. Think about it from this simple fact of the players that they've added this offseason, basically 10 new rosterable players, free agents. Are you really going to add 10 more draft picks and turn this roster? Now, I'm not saying that all 10 would make the team, but I think you need to have that in mind that when you make draft picks, that it's a legitimate chance that they're rosterable. So even if it's 18, is there 18 new roster spots available? That seems like a ton to me. That's a ton of roster turnover in year three of Sean McDermott, year two with Brandon Bean, or well, I guess full year two. So I think that's absolutely true. And I don't think the Bills will, I think it's unlikely that they'll trade up for number nine, but you're 100% right. At number 40, if the Bills wanted to move up and make sure they get an Irv Smith or from their third round pick, what do the Bills pick? Is it 74? 74 to move back up into the second round? Absolutely. The Bills have all that extra ammunition, the extra four, the extra five, the extra seven. I think that the Bills would be wise to think about packaging some of those picks to move up on day two and make sure they get some of their premium targets of guys that they want. So, Corey, I think you're all over it. It makes sense logically, and we've seen the Bills do this. They've traded up a ton. They traded up for Josh Allen. They traded up for Tremaine Edmonds. Traded up for Zay Jones. Traded up for Deion Dawkins. So it's not something that the Bills have ever been afraid to do, and I think it makes a lot of sense just because of the reality that rostering 10 draft picks doesn't make sense. The other thing that's interesting is they could trade out. So you ever see teams do this? Like the Bills have two fourth-round picks. You trade a fourth-round pick this year for a third-round pick the next year. And so the Bills could try to maybe leverage some capital in 2020 and beyond by trading completely out of certain picks, which they're in shape to do. And I would make sure I make picks in the first, second, and third round. But when we start talking about those extra fourths and fifths, trade that fourth round pick for a three in 2020. I'd be about that. So I do think there's some unique flexibility that the Bills have. And it's really cool to talk about the fact that there could be, that we're talking about how difficult it would be for 10 rookies to make this roster. Feels good. You feel good about the direction of this team. And that speaks to the dead cap last year, right? The Bills had $50 million in dead cap space. And that is basically exactly a one-for-one of what they're paying all these new players that they signed. So the Bills made big-time concessions last year in terms of talent to rip the Band-Aid off and get that dead cap out of the way. Now it's cleaned up, and the depth of the roster, you can already see that impact. And we're nervous about adding 10 rookies to the mix. This is a really good problem to have. So it feels good to be on the other side of that dead cap space for sure. Good point there, Corey. I like that one. Patrick Henderson says, everyone knows the potential edge players the Bills could potentially draft at number nine, and he mentions Rashawn Gary, Montez Sweat, Brian Burns. If they go defensive tackle in round one, who are some of the round two, three guys we need to know about? Ja'Kai Polite isn't a McDermott guy, but how would Winovich and others fit? Really good question. I love Winovich. If the Bills got Winovich at 40, I would do cartwheels. I'll be in Nashville doing a live stream for the Draft Network, but you will see me go pretty crazy there on the live stream if you tune in. I agree with you 100%. Ja'Kai Polite will not be a Buffalo Bill. Nothing about him is what the Bills are looking for, personality, character, work ethic, attitude-wise. But Chase Winovich, definitely. I think there's going to be some people that think he's an off-ball, a stand-up 3-4 outside backer. I don't think so at all. I don't like him in space. I like him in an attacking role, and I like him with his hand in the dirt. And so he's a touch undersized, but, man, he is just so technically refined. He's so athletic, and his effort is insane. So I love Chase. I'd love to get him at 40. He would be a great second-round pick. This is where it gets challenging. And if you guys listen to some of the mock drafts that I ran through live on the podcast, you know how difficult I think it is to find impact edge rushers on day two in the second or third round. Christian Miller from Alabama, I like him as a true 34 outside linebacker. I don't think he'd be a great fit for the Bills. DeAndre Walker from Georgia, he's a good run defender. He flashes as a pass rusher, but he does not get me going at all in terms of a day two pick. I don't know, guys. I really, that's why I'm going, that's what I struggle with so much when I think about the Bills getting a pass rusher outside of the first round or like Chase Winovich in the second round, just because I just don't see the value. I don't see the realistic, like, hey, this is an impact pass rusher. And what I keep going back to is beyond this year, the only edge rusher on the team is Trent Murphy. And a good defense is not going to have Trent Murphy as its lead pass rusher off the edge. And the Bills have a big task ahead of them in rebuilding this pass rushing arsenal to really be dynamic. And right now, I don't think it's overly dynamic. I don't think outside of Jerry Hughes that I get very excited about any of the Bills' edge rushers in terms of pass rush. So I think there are short and long-term concerns. And so it's an important position. We're not talking about like right guard or like your third linebacker. We're talking about your friggin' pass rush, your ability to win off the edge and affect quarterbacks. So like I need a big-time pass rusher. And I don't know that I get excited about the guys on day two. I just don't. Okay, thank you for that one, Patrick. This one comes from Usain Boris. He says, if the Bills go offensive line in round one, it should be for Jonah Williams. He offers positional versatility, which means you can let the O-line competition play out. He gives you more options to get the best five offensive linemen on the field. I think the Bills would love to get Jonah Williams in terms of, like, you know, I was at his press conference at the Combine, and I've listened to him talk at other times as well throughout his career, and I just feel like there's a certain presence about him, the way he carries himself, that he is a high-character guy, super, like, culture-type guy, one of those, like, pillar pieces like that. For Jonah, I get nervous about his length, and he gets outreached on film, and so I know that the Bills like prototypes, and so I don't know. If the Bills go offensive line at nine, I don't think it would be for Jonah Williams. I could be convinced that it's Jonah Williams because of his personality and that he's wired the right way. And I love that he does give you the upside to play left or right tackle or maybe even guard. However, I think that he has some warts on film that we need to identify and not just overlook. So you have to question, okay, is this an offensive lineman that's worth the number nine pick in the draft? But then also, if the Bills go offensive line, I think that Jawan Taylor from Florida has significantly better tape. This is my opinion. I don't think the Bills are going to go offensive line at nine. There's been such an influx on this offensive line group, and I get that you can still make a case for there being a need at right tackle. Like, let's say Ty Nsekhe plays left tackle, Deion Dawkins kicks into guard. You have Mitch Morse at center, and then you have a million different options at right guard. And then, you know, who's the real right tackle? Is it Adrian Waddle? Probably not. You know, you can really get a high-impact player if you can get Jawan Taylor at nine. So I'm not writing off offensive line altogether. I think it's very unlikely at nine. I feel like they probably like the mix of guys they have right now. I just get nervous about Jonah Williams and him not having the length that we really need. And Brandon Bean, he talked about it with Nsekhe. And that he's really just, he's hard to get around because he's so long. And it widens those tracks for pass rushers. And so, I don't know. I just don't know if I'm reading too much into that, or if the reality is Brandon Bean's going to discriminate against Jonah Williams' inability to consistently keep pass rushers at the edge of his reach. So, there's my take on that. Last one here comes from JDB. He says, TJ Hockenson's all-around game and demeanor seem perfect for Sean McDermott, but Noah Fant's speed and ability to create separation seems like a better fit for Allen. If the Bills went tight end in round one, which one would you pick? This is a tough question. I wish I could punt it and ride the fence, but you didn't ask the question for me to ride the fence. Okay, so I agree with your overall assessment there. You do have a more all-around balanced player in TJ Hockenson. Better blocker, really solid receiver. Noah Fant, you'd make big-time concessions as a blocker, but a super dynamic guy in terms of being able to really challenge the seam, create after the catch, be a vertical threat. Which one would I pick? I would pick TJ Hockenson. I think that they're both going to be really high-impact guys. But I think that there is obviously the blocking matters to me a lot, but I don't think the drop-off in terms of dynamic receiving ability is that much. And Hockenson, I think that he has the ability to be a Travis Kelce-like tight end. Whereas Noah Fant, I think he can be like what we saw from Eric Ebron this past year. So really dynamic, but I think there's an all-around dominance from TJ Hockenson that I gravitate towards. And if the Bills went tight end at 9, it would be my hope that it would be for TJ Hockenson. That'll do it, guys. You guys are awesome. Send in some fabulous takes and questions. So fill them up for me next week. Hit me up on Twitter, like I talked about, at the Joe Marino, hashtag Twitter Tuesday. And let's have another awesome show next Tuesday doing the Twitter Tuesday thing. We have a guest lined up. I've confirmed all that. That'll be on our, is it Thursday? Either Thursday or Friday podcast, talking about the Bills offensive line additions with one of my favorite offensive line guys out there. So really excited about that. You have that to look forward to this week, as well as a couple other shows. So hit that subscribe button. Leave that 5-star review. I always ask for that. If you do it, that's really awesome. The written reviews are awesome too. I appreciate anything that you do to share the podcast. Tell a friend, retweet it, tweet it yourself, all that type of stuff. Just very thankful for any efforts that you would put into helping me grow this podcast, and really appreciate your listenership. I really mean that. All right, guys, I'll be back again for you tomorrow, and thank you for listening to Locked On Bills.